I would say that the pandemic allowed people to take in the atrocity of George Floyd's death and to see it in the ways in which it opens out to all of the murders that have happened that we knew about and were adding up over a lifetime and historically over centuries. Because it wasn't new, you know? But we were sensitized in a way to our own vulnerabilities, our own complicity. We had time for it. We had time to take in the deep impact in a way that wouldn't have happened if they had to also negotiate going to work or catching a flight or all the things that were taken away during the pandemic.
When we started thinking about a show on loneliness, we knew from the beginning that we wanted to talk with Claudia Rankine, the American poet, essayist, playwright, and MacArthur Fellow. She's best known for her book Citizen, an American Lyric. It's the only poetry book to be a bestseller in the nonfiction category. One of the first books Rankine ever wrote is called Don't Let Me Be Lonely. Her most recent, called Just Us, is based on conversations with friends about race, whiteness, and white privilege. And so it seems to me that loneliness is at the heart of what she's been writing and thinking about for a long time.
You know, I've often thought that if you asked me what is the one word I would put forward to describe all my work, it would be intimacy. But loneliness is tied into the desire for intimacy, you know? And in this country, racial politics has been the biggest, most brutal wall that has stood between me and others. And by others, I don't just mean white people. I mean, it prevents intimacy with other Black people. You know, there's just so much pain and rage and ramifications around dealing with systemic racism.
You write about a concept called ethical loneliness. Can you explain that?
The philosopher Jill Stover, she writes about a concept called ethical loneliness. What it means is if you're home right now and you feel lonely and devastated and abandoned, you are. And the world, you know, you are. And so we are right now in one of those periods of ethical loneliness.
I still don't understand exactly what that is.
Well, it's when, you know, policy decisions, when our government has put in place laws that literally has created the loneliness. So think of DACA. Think of those kids separated from their parents and put in camps. Now, if they're feeling lonely, they're feeling lonely because they have been ethically abandoned.
Is that the same thing that the sociologist Orlando Patterson talks about, social death?
Well, I think Orlando Patterson's idea of social death is tied to this. People use that term social death thinking about anti-Blackness, for example, where all of the laws and all of the practices and the assumptions that you encounter do not take you into account. And so you are not actually relevant to the life that you're inside of.
You're there, but you're not there.
You're there and you're not there. You're there and you're not there. I've just been watching Lupin. It's a French
That series. Yes. I just watched the whole thing.
Exactly. I watch it on the bike in the morning. And one of the assumptions that he makes is that he's invisible.
Yeah.
So he can be in and out because nobody sees him as a Black man. And so that's a kind of social death.
I guess I'm thinking about, again, how this relates to loneliness, because we want intimacy. But I think one of the products of living in an anti-Black racist society is that to be intimate with other people requires you to participate in your own invisibility in a way. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Well, when you say other people, who do you mean? Do you mean me as a Black woman?
How did I?
You said part of the interaction means that you have to be complicit with your invisibility. So that's me. And not you as a white woman.
You're right. That assumption that whiteness is present and Blackness is not. You're right.
Yeah, and that would be social death, anti-Blackness. The question for me, though, for you would be, what do you lose, you know, in that interaction? Because you become kind of inhuman in a way. To make me invisible is to make you inhuman.
Yes.
And
yes,
that does not.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why
work.
Some of the conversations that we're trying to have as white people and Black people, I just feel like we haven't figured out yet how to have those deeper conversations where we acknowledge the pain and the loneliness and the damage on all sides.
Mm-hmm. You know, because often with me, in many of the conversations that I record in Just Us with white friends, and these are friends, these are not pretend friends, these are friends, longstanding friends. You have these moments and they're profoundly disappointing when they happen, at least for me. There's an essay about going to see a play to see Jackie Sibley's Jury's Fairview with a white friend, and she refused to go on stage when the play asked the white people to go on stage and leave the space for Black people to experience something they don't experience in the real world. And she refuses to do it. And the fact that she didn't get up was profoundly disappointing. And even as we continue our friendship, that disappointment now holds a place in our friendship, you know?
Could we go deeper into that story? That was the one that there's so much in that, so much to unpack. The two of you went to see a play. This is a friend you've had for a long time, and she's interested in whiteness, and she's white. And the play is by a Black woman, and it's about race, correct?
Exactly. And in the play, the daughter in the play turns to the audience and says, you know, it would be interesting if the white people of this audience could go on stage and open up a space for Black people that's not touched by whiteness and the white gaze and white people assessing Black people, and just give Black and brown people the last, you know, I would say 10 minutes of the play.
Mm. It doesn't seem like a big thing to ask.
Yeah, it just, you know, you get up, you walk on the stage, you come back, get your stuff and you leave. But people, I get it, you're in your seat comfortably. You don't necessarily want to get up and go. But given the state of the world and how poignant these issues have been and how public these discussions have been about anti-Blackness and the killing of Black people, you would think it's a no-brainer, you know?
I mean, if all you have to do is get out of your comfortable seat and walk up on stage, that seems like yes.
Exactly. And I get it's performative and it doesn't mean anything ultimately, maybe, but you know.
You're sitting there with your friend and she does not get up. And the play is going on, so you don't just turn to her and say, what the are you doing?
Mm-hmm. You know, I have had conversations with other Black women who've had the same experience. And they said to me, I just turned to my friend and said, why don't you go up there? What are you doing? And then they went. But I didn't want to do that because I didn't want her to feel bullied by me. Mm. I didn't want her to do it because of me. I wanted her to do it because of her. I wanted it to be her decision. And so I didn't say anything, but I was enraged. I was getting more and more and more angry, but I was really getting more and more disappointed. And it was a kind of sadness that was kind of running around in my body.
Yeah.
So at the end of the play, I just said to her, I didn't know you were Black. And she doesn't answer that.
Wait, you didn't say anything more? And the two of you just went home and you didn't talk about it?
Mm-mm. It was raining. I remember the day. It was pouring rain. And so when I exited the theater, I just ran for the car and she went home. And we maybe checked in once that week. And
did she bring it up again?
No, I brought it up. And then she, said she didn't want to. And that was like a double slap.
Yeah.
But then she tried to unpack that feeling of I didn't want to, which is not to say I agree with it. I don't agree with it. But I did appreciate her attempt to kind of understand what the resistance was.
But she also never said she was wrong.
Right. Because she doesn't think she's wrong. For her, it's some form of, what did she say? Like diversity work. I'm like, it's a play. It's culture. How did you get diversity work in there?
So what I find fascinating is that you are still friends.
Well, my intent is not to surround myself with people who understand what I understand. My intent is to surround myself with people who are willing to question the things that I question. And this particular friend is a philosopher. And we do spend time sort of unpacking certain things. And we have had some interesting interactions. At one point, I said to her, you understand that you're racist, and that racism probably goes as far as your family. And she said, no, that's not possible. Her parents were involved in civil rights work, et cetera, et cetera. And then a year later, after that conversation, something incredibly racist was said in her home, and she called me up and said to me, I can't believe they said this. She was truly, truly shocked. So I see her as a healthy person to be around because it lets me see the willful blindness of whiteness, even as one claims to understand how white supremacy is at play in this country.
But see, those kinds of experiences strike me as just this kind of recurrent loneliness where over and over again, basically white people disappoint you because they don't get, we don't get it. We don't see.
Well, you don't need to get it.
But we do because it's like we don't realize how much we're hurt too. Of course we need to get it. We all do. I mean, otherwise we're, missing half of humanity, missing each other.
Well, one of the things I'm hoping will be a consequence of this period is that people will understand how necessary other people are to them. And consequently, will be more willing to attempt to talk to people, more willing to attempt to meet people halfway, because we can't live under a state of siege. We can't really live knowing that 50% of this country would be willing to blow it all up. And so we're really going to have to figure out a way to come to a place that's workable for us. And that's, in a way, that's why I like Black Lives Matter as a movement, because it's always had as part of its agenda, the desire for people to run for public office and to be involved in both grassroots and government so that things can shift institutionally as well as personally. I think ethical loneliness is about that shift.
Claudia, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Claudia Rankine, an award-winning poet, playwright, and essayist. Her new book is called Just Us, An American Conversation.